let's talk a moment. So there's the challenge of the backlog, the challenge of growth, which can you know, it creates constraints of its own and limitations of its own, just from volume versus space.
Yes.
You know, and so with your steady hand, because you when were you appointed in your current position?
I was appointed in July of 2022.
So you've been in that role for 18 months, mm-hmm. about, and so well familiar, especially with your long background. And so Brenda, how important is it that chaos not be introduced into the clerk's office?
It's very important.
And tell us about that. Like, what would chaos look like in that office?
Chaos in our office is a turnover of your judges,
mm-hmm.
Dealing with the locations, with the dockets, because we have to send out docket notices. We have to send all of the parties in that are involved in the case, attorneys, mm-hmm. the parties, sometimes the sheriff's office, as far as subpoenas go, issuing subpoenas for cases. We have to have set dockets, set locations, and these dockets have to be determined months out. They can't be changed in a two-week period, because sometimes if it's a small docket, it could be, but most of the time these dockets have 15 mm-hmm. to 20 or more cases set on them. If you're talking a traffic docket, you could be talking 300 to 400 cases.
Right. So just in
on
scheduling,
a traffic docket.
Just in scheduling alone,
it could be a nightmare. Can be a nightmare if mm-hmm. you're not keeping up with your judges, where they're at, making sure that the court dates are entered correctly. Mm-hmm. The transfer of cases, when Judge Hoyt and Judge Kemp take office, there will be a transfer of cases of those. And I wouldn't call it a backlog of cases, because most of our cases, we dispose of almost as many cases as we get new filings. We get over 3,000 filings a month.
Wow.
In all of our 9 divisions combined. So that generates a lot of cases to schedule mm-hmm. on a lot of days, mm-hmm. and the days are limited. So you can only schedule so many cases on a day. So let's not say that it's so much a backlog as it is just a matter of keeping up with the number of judges right. that we have now. They will transfer. There will be a transfer of some of their cases to these new judges. So you've got to have staff in place that knows how to contact. The Administrative Office of Courts can programmatically do some of that for us. Mm-hmm. But there's a lot of instances where they can't, and it will have to be manually done by employees in my office to go in and change the JIDs on those cases that are assigned to the new judges.
Right.
So you've got to make sure that you've got someone who is aware of where these cases were and what was happening on them, and know how to continue so that there's no disconnect between the old judge and the new judge.
Right.
It could get very chaotic if it's
and
not
expensive,
done properly.
More expensive, because we all know that these processes are expensive anyway, anytime we involve attorneys, right?
And we don't want to bring people up to the courthouse and then them right. get there and find out that the judge isn't there, that they were supposed to be in Fairhope or Foley,
right.
not in Baymanette. Because like you said, it's already tough enough right. driving.
Well, on the back side of that, and I understand you cannot comment and would not anyway, right? But it's but you know, from the average person on the street, you know, it's a real problem, because, you know, the longer that these cases get strung out and rescheduled or rescheduled again on a new docket, that attorney is going to bill.
That is true.
You know, that attorney is going to bill for time, and they're going to have to process it, and so that's a separate bill, new
and
bill.
And it's a legitimate expense.
Absolutely. Well, but unless you're on the receiving end and you have to pay that, and then it's you know, your temperature and your blood pressure jump, right?
You wonder why it's having to be continued so many times.
Yes, ma'am. So, which is, again, getting back at the order versus chaos, and how important it is to have a steady hand on the helm, and to make sure that ship of state, you know, Baldwin County anyway, you know, is you can't put a price on it. You really
can't. No, and it's very important that the clerk's office is doing what they're supposed to, and they're not making mistakes that causes that case to have to be continued.
Right.
I never want to be the reason for a case to have to be continued, or I don't want my office to be the reason that a case has to be continued.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So we hear that we hear some talk, you know, between the commissioners and you know, in their public statements and some other folks, that there may be a new Baldwin County judicial building, courthouse built at some point. And so now, you know, again, we'll see if that, you know, if the voters get to weigh in on that, which we should. Okay, but any timeline for that? What are they, have they surveyed the clerk and asked for your input?
Well, when they asked us to move downstairs, they told us that they were going to be building a new courthouse, and they gave a time frame of within the next 10 years. Now, I don't know that that's a doable date, mm-hmm. because as far as I know, they would have to find the property and a location for it. So mm-hmm. 10 years may be being optimistic, but then again, they are the county commission. They make him pull it off. So,
well, hey, they gave us two new judges, so
they gave, know. Well, that actually came from the legislature. They mm-hmm. they gave us three. We'll be getting another new judge in 2027 that'll take the bench in 2027. To this term that will take the bench in 2025, and then a new circuit judge. That circuit judge will not be district court or family court. That judge will be a general jurisdiction judge, which means they will be hearing jury trials and both civil and criminal.
Okay.
So,
thanks for that update. I didn't actually know that there was a third judge.
There is a third judge coming in 2027. The bill that the legislature passed included Baldwin County to get three judges, and the third one would not be available. We would not get that judge until we'd take the bench in 2027.
That's closer than you think.
When you start thinking about it, it's not that far down the road, and that's part of what they're with the renovations they're trying to do, just to get us through until we do get a new courthouse, is trying to make sure that there is going to be space for that judge also, so that we don't have to go through this all again. So
Brenda, and thank you for that background. So for those who might not be aware, because your team does so much for so many, for your public facing services, okay, for the average person that comes into your office, what are some of the things that they may interface with the circuit clerk on? Products do you provide?
They're going to interface with us if they need a warrant. If someone has come onto their property and stolen something, and they file a report with the police department. If they have a grievance, and the sheriff's department gives them a warrant card, they will come to our office, and we have magistrates in our office, and we will they'll fill out a deposition, mm-hmm. and we'll read that deposition, and we will determine whether or not to issue a warrant or a summons. Both will bring them into court. So that's a lot of people come to us with grievances. Mm-hmm. If someone owes you money and they don't pay that money and you want to file a small claims, you're going to come into our office. Now, we are a little bit more user-friendly, I'll use that term, in small claims court, because small claims court, we have a lot of forms that we can hand out that we can give to people in small claims court. They can also go into the Administrative Office of Court's website, and there is an e-form section where they can download those forms off of that website. And it's a little bit easier because they don't have to have an attorney to file a small claims. Mm-hmm. When you get past small claims, district civil, circuit civil, divorces, you pretty much have to have an attorney when you get into those courts. If you have any kind of criminal charge against you, we can give you the forms so that you can fill out affidavits of hardship to have an attorney appointed for you if you can't afford an attorney. So we see a lot of people with that. The biggest thing we see in our office is payments. We are the physical officers of the court. So all of the monies collected, ordered by the courts and collected, comes through our office. Mm-hmm. We do a little over $1.5 million a month in collections. And that's not all by people coming to our counter. It's from garnishments that we receive through the mail and judgments that we receive through the mail. But
so we, in the ballpark of $14 million a year,
yes,
currently.
Yes. Oh, okay. And those people that have traffic tickets can go online and pay them, but a lot of people don't trust those online computers. They don't use computers. So they walk up to our counter with cash money, and they want to take care of those tickets that they're issued. The game and fish tickets, the marine police tickets, all of those are also handled in our office. So we see a lot of people. We take a lot of money in mm-hmm. over the counter in our office.
What about passports and IDs?
We do not do IDs. The IDs are issued by the Sheriff's Department, but we do passports. We do a lot of passports from everybody from Escambia County to Mobile County and to Baldwin County. We do it in our Fairhope, Foley, and Baymanette offices. We do not do pictures on site, so when those people come in to get those passports, they need to make sure they have the pictures with them when they come in, and they also have to have an original birth certificate, which means it has to have a raised embossed seal or tricolor stamp, mm-hmm. and they have to be aware that that original is going to be mailed to the U.S. Department of State. They will return it with the passport when the passport is issued, but they require us to submit the original documents, and then we need driver's license or some other type of picture ID, mm-hmm. And we make a copy of the driver's license and give it back to them.
Right. So there's also this other, regarding ID, you know, there's this other effort at in Alabama is a signatory to the smart ID concept, right? And so you and I talked about this offline at a separate meeting, but you know, the people that I speak with, we're all concerned about that. You know, we're not interested in digital ID. We don't, you know, the truth of the matter is that, you know, the average citizen walking around there should be free, truly free, you know, as has been upheld by the Supreme Court of the United States and our Constitution for, you know, nearly 250 years, is that we have a right to anonymity. We have a right to be walking around as truly free people, you know, and you know, we're not, you know, I'm not accountable to you. Now I'm accountable to you, you know, in my public behavior,
right?
You know, as my fellow citizen. But you know, the smart ID, are you guys seeing any move at your level, you know, at the circuit court level, to implement smart ID or ask for digital ID or tie that to automatic payment on citations or court fees or anything like that, bank accounts? You know, are you seeing anything like that?
No, sir. We have not made any kind of move such as that with the court system. All of our payments, although you can go online and make them, it has to be initiated by the individual themselves. There is no automatic payment. We do not seize money from anybody's account to pay their court cost. So no, we're not going into the digital ID. As far as passports go, it is a federal requirement that a driver's license or some other type of photo ID be submitted. So it would have to be a physical license would have to be handed to us. It could not be a digital record that would be transferred mm-hmm. for that. So no, we have not seen any inclination to go with a digital ID in our court system.
Well, that's good to hear. You know, the concern for that is that there seems to be a movement and a push. Not seems to be. There is a movement and a push at the international and at the federal level to implement digital ID. And it started, really, I think most people's first introduction to that was when they tried to push digital IDs during COVID for vaccine passports. And that's utterly ridiculous, you know, and the Supreme Court has ruled on that in January 7th, I think, of 22. They said that, you know, that even employers have no right to ask for that. And so, you know, there's been, you know, somewhat some pushback. You know, I can speak as a citizen and say that I've been disappointed in our judiciary's handling of those matters. Not, you know, of course, Baldwin County doesn't hear those type of cases, but
no,
the, you know, but the thing that we also look for is we look for updates from our circuit clerk to see, you know, okay, we don't read all of the, you know, the rulings and the new law coming out of Montgomery, and so much of that is influenced by lobbyists. Corrupt lobbyist, I would mention, okay, and you know who have vested interest in you know tying the average citizen to mandatory requirements. You know how it is. I mean, government, you know, if they can use government to you know to force people you know to get inside somebody's wallet, they will.
They will.
You know, they will.
I have not seen any legislation proposed or passed that refers to the digital.
The smart card or smart ID. Well, we would, you know, for listeners out there, I would just encourage you to, you know, to research this effort, you know, the smart card, the smart ID, and make sure that you're talking with your legislators, okay? So, you know, we're, you know, it's so very important that we maintain our constitutional rights to anonymity and liberty and freedom. And, you know, so research that, talk with your state and federal reps and make sure that they understand your position on that, because it's something, it's one of those things from government that can easily creep in the back door, and the next thing you know, we're all a bunch of digital slaves, and we don't want that. So now, Ms. Brenda, the last question I'll have for you is the election. One of the services that your office provides is absentee ballots, and so we you know, people out there, you know, the evidence is overwhelming from previous elections, and especially federal and state elections, where, you know, the cameras have caught, you know, ballot stuffing, mail-in ballot fraud, and not just a little bit, at scale. You know, one of the examples I would give is the excellent documentary 2000 Mules from last year, where they talked about absentee ballot fraud and voter fraud, you know, just at massive levels. And what can you tell our listeners about the circuit court's involvement and proofs, okay, their you know, their oversight on the absentee ballot process in Baldwin County?
Okay, on the absentee ballots, we require an application has to be filled out, and you have to provide a copy of your driver's license proving that you are that person that is signing that application and that you live at the address that's on the driver's license, or on the application. The driver's license and the application have to match. They also have to sign those application forms, and when we receive them, we have to verify the person's name, that they are a registered voter. And when we pull up there, we're linked with the board of registrars, and when we pull up their voter ID card where they registered to vote, there is a signature, believe it or not, on our screens. So we can look at the signature on that application and on that driver's license and on that board of registrations, and we can verify that that person, any that we think there is a problem with, then we can mark them as provisional, or we can contact probate office and they can investigate it. But we do not send ballots unless we can confirm that that person that is applying for that ballot is the person, is that person. Once that person files that application and we mail that ballot, they are in the computers as voting absentee. So that means that they can't go to the polls and vote if they have been sent a ballot. If they do go to the polls and vote, say we never got that ballot back, instead they found out they weren't going to be out of town and they went to the polls to vote on the day of the election, then they can vote a provisional ballot. And what that means is the Board of Registrars and the Canvassing Board is going to verify that they did not vote twice, that they only voted one time. And that's the reason it is considered a provisional ballot, and they determine whether or not that ballot can be counted or not. Provisionals are counted after the election, but the results do go in. Mm-hmm. But I will not be the absentee election manager for this term because I do have opposition. Ms. Violeta Smith has been appointed as the absentee election manager. She worked with the probate office for years. You couldn't find a more experienced person to handle the absentees than Ms. Violeta. Her duties in the probate office were working with the elections. So she is very well aware of what she's got to do and what has to, all the minimum qualifications that have to be met, and she knows how to secure those ballots for us during the primary. So I don't think we've got to worry about fraud. The Secretary of State has also implemented, they've come up with a new system that links for deaths, so that applications are not being submitted for people that have that are deceased. They're removing those names from the voter list. So they have done a lot to help us. We also receive and talk with other states for people that are registered to vote in Tennessee or have moved their registration from Alabama to another state, say Tennessee. Mm-hmm. Tennessee will contact us to make sure that person is not on our registers
anymore.
Make sure
the transfer was effective,
yes.
And that you're not
this
double
person
counting.
This person is now registered in our state. Mm-hmm. And you need to make sure they're not in yours. So
last question, and not a trick question, okay? But it needs to be asked. And everybody that I talk with here, and just day to day, you know, walking around on the Eastern Shore, people are concerned about it. And that is all of these millions of illegal aliens pouring over our southern border. And you know, so this is America, right? We are a nation of immigrants. But there is a right way to do things, and there are illegal ways to do things. And you know, the real concern that people have, and we've talked about it on this show previously, where they are, a lot of members of both parties at very senior levels, you know, or uniparty or whatever, that's my term, not your term, but you know, people who want, you know, they have vested interest and they need farm workers, especially out in the Southwest and the West, you know, to harvest our lettuce so it gets on the table, you know, and they'll do anything. And it's not the first time that we've had a real problem at the border, you know, but these people coming across the border, you know, the ones that land here in Baldwin County, and it's not just a few, okay, how would your office handle an illegal immigrant or someone walking in, and it might be pretty clear that, you know, that they are not a legal resident of Baldwin County in the state of Alabama?
If we know that they are an illegal, mm-hmm. illegally in the country, we are supposed to detain them and notify DYS. Our Department of Homeland Security.
Right, DHS. Yeah.
DHS.
So are you aware of that happening at all?
I'm not aware of it happening, no. Because most of those people will not come into our office.
Right. No, they avoid the establishment,
yes.
Like the
they're
plague.
They're gonna call and they're either gonna log on and pay their fines
remotely,
and we never see those people. They don't come into our office. Now, I do not know if they go into the courtrooms or not, if they're defendants, if they show up on their court dates, what happens to them, because we're not in the courtroom,
right,
on the court dates. But I do know we see very few in our office. I couldn't tell you the last time that we knew of one. But we are supposed to notify law enforcement.
Right.
This
well,
is
the concern,
WABF.
We're aware
Mobile,
of the concern.
Fairhope.
The concern is
great,
some
music
people think
and
that
memories
being turned to the, you know, the illegals are being given IDs so that they, and then empowered to vote, to go register to vote, and that they can influence or sway the vote. Now, from what I've heard here in Baldwin, that has not been an issue here. What I have seen in Texas, having done some work out there, is that it certainly is changing the demographics and the voting demographic in South Texas, and going into, you know, changing some of them to purple. But it's, you know, it's a real concern, you know. So the part of it is that we, you know, we see and we read that DHS and these NGOs are giving them, IDs and driver's licenses, you know, when they come over across the border. And so by the time they get to Alabama, it's a non-story. You know, they already are registered somewhere with this ID, and you know, and so it's just something, you know, from your experience, where, you know, people are asking the question, are these people going to be able to sway a local election or a county election, or, you know, weigh in Alabama's third largest county to sway a state vote?
Well, I don't know. That's a question for the probate office on who would be allowed to vote at the polls. Mm-hmm. But as far as absentee goes, they have to be on that voter registration list, which means part of that is you have to be a U.S. citizen mm-hmm. to get on that list. So I would think that the Board of Registrars requires some type of proof of citizenship, whether it's a birth certificate or some other type of identifying documentation that you are
naturalization, whatever it
yes,
might be.
Mm-hmm. Yes. So it may be a little bit harder than it is. I'm not sure how they would be doing it out in Texas, mm-hmm. but I do know that you have to prove citizenship. And then once you get on that list, like I said, I'm not for sure. If you're not on that list, they're not going to allow you to vote at the polls. So,
yeah. Well, it's clear that I think we're doing a better job here.
I think Alabama does a great job with the voting. The Secretary of State Wes Allen has done a great job. He's made some great improvements. Mm-hmm. And I think Alabama would be a tough state to do a fraudulent vote mm-hmm. in the state of Alabama.
Any drop boxes in Baldwin County?
No.
Yeah. Okay. So, Brenda Ganey, thank you so much for joining us from the Baldwin County Clerk of Court, Circuit Court, and we really appreciate your insights. It's invaluable, and you know, just want to encourage folks to, you know, contact Brenda and her staff if you have any needs or questions. And you know, you've got the well qualified and certainly the most friendly, you know, Clerk of Court that we've seen in some time. Brenda, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me, and Merry Christmas.
Yes, ma'am. Merry Christmas. All right, Mark, thank you so much. Merry Christmas to all of our listeners out there. And we'll be back with you next Friday for Conservative Watchdog Weekly. Mark?
You've been listening to the Conservative Watchdog Weekly News Review with your retired U.S. Navy Intelligence Officer Deke Cox. Brought to you by Spriggs Enterprises, featuring the Shell gas stations on Highway 98 in Daphne and in Malbus with a state-of-the-art car wash, and by an anonymous sponsor. If you missed part of the show or want to tell a friend, you can listen later at WABF1480.com. And we now are resuming regular programming. Merry Christmas from 1480 WABF.